Okay. All right, let's do Parshas Kisavo. Parshas Kisavo is most noted for the Tocha in the middle, which is the long, long list of curses and whatnot in Shishi, I believe. It does start off with a couple other topics. You have the Mitzvah of Bikurim at the beginning, which is a beautiful idea. We'll talk about it a little bit. It has something called Vidui Meiser, which is after the whole Shemitah cycle of all the Meisros, Truma, you know, Meiser, Meiser Rishon, Meiser Sheni. After that whole thing finishes up, there's a parsha that you say in the Beis Hamikdash. We talk about how the Torah, keeping the Torah is a zchus, right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah as, you know, because we're a beloved people to Him. There's something called the Brachos and the Klolos, which is Moshe commanded Bnei Yisrael to do after they crossed into Eretz Yisrael and Har Gerizim and Har Eval. They're basically a very bit of a strange parsha where they would put six tribes on one mountain, six tribes on another mountain, and do Brachos and Klolos. Very interesting. Where you have the long Tochecha, and then you have one final pep talk by Moshe Rabbeinu. So we'll talk about a little bit of it. We'll talk about Bikurim, talk about the Tochecha a little bit. And hopefully get ready for Slichos. Although you guys have been saying Slichos for a month already, but we're us white people are going to start saying Slichos on Matzah Shabbos. Tov. Okay, so Bikurim. The first part of the Torah talks about the first part of the parsha talks about Bikurim. So there are a couple aspects just to talk about Bikurim. Right, there's something called the Hafrasha, which is basically you separate the first fruits when they start to bloom. That's really, you know, you go out to the field, you tie a ribbon around it, you see some apples growing or whatever. Apples is a bad example. Let's say Shiva Minim or whatever, pomegranates. Right. So then, you tie a string around those trees, those branches, when the fruit actually blooms. So then you bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, you bring the first fruit to the Beis HaMikdash, and then you have this whole string of psukim that you say found in this week's parsha. Also, right, you speak out portions of the Torah that talk about the Bikurim, a whole history of the Am Yisrael, right, starting with Yaakov and Lavan, all the way through Yitzias Mitzrayim and thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that type of stuff. So basically, the idea of Bikurim is twofold, as we'll say in a second. But the Rambam quotes that as two separate mitzvos. And you know, both the Hafrasha, the separating, and the Hava, the bringing of the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. And both of them are classic concepts in Hakaras HaTov. Just like, let's say, by Birkas HaMazon, for example, right? The entire concept of Birkas HaMazon, right? Thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Hazanas Olam, he gives us all this type of food. No Delecha, we give you thanks. So Mikur Bikurim is also, the whole idea is rooted in Hakaras HaTov, which is very quickly. I heard many times from my Rebbe, Rav Yonatan Sacks, that Bikurim is a very underrated mitzvah. Right? Even though we don't do it nowadays, but Mitzvah Shem will happen soon. For example, the Rashi, the beginning of the Torah, not the Parsha, but the beginning of the Torah, right, says, Pasuk says, Bereishis Bara Elokim, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, right, in the beginning. So Rashi quotes a Tanhum over there that says, Bereishis is a, what's the word? Contraption? That's not the word. Whatever it is when you combine two words. What word am I looking for? I don't know. Whatever. Contraction. Anyway, it says, the Rashi, that Bereishis actually means Bishvil Reishis, that the world was created for Reishis. The question is, what's Reishis? So Rashi quotes the Tanhumah, the Medrash, and it says a couple of things in the Torah are called Reishis. Bnei Yisrael are called Reishis. The Torah is called Reishis. But Rashi cuts off over there, and the next example the Tanchuma gives, that the Medrash gives, is Bikurim. That Bikurim is called Reishis Amasachat Avi Beis Hashem Alkecha. That Bikurim is called Reishis. I'm not sure if the pasuk I just quoted is correct, actually. Whatever, I don't have a chumash in front of me. But basically, Bikurim is called Reishis also. The question is very strange, because I understand that if the world is created for the Torah, that I get. If the world is created for Bnei Yisrael, that I get. But if the world is created for Bikurim, listen, Bikurim is very nice, but it's a very random mitzvah. Right? Why would the world be created for Bikurim? So my Rebbe liked to quote the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, that the whole purpose of the world is liyeda uliyoda, is to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, and liyoda, to give thanks to him for everything that we've done. And that's literally the concept of Bikurim, right? That's when we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's making the fruits grow, that yes, we put in the effort, you water the fields, you plant the trees, whatever it is, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who brings out the fruit and a good crop. So when we mark that off in the fields, and then we come to the Beis HaMikdash, and we have this whole history of the Jews, thank you so much for all you've done for us, that's literally liyeda uliyoda. That's to know and to give thanks. Right? That's literally the essence of the mitzvah. So that makes a lot of sense, why the world was created for Rishis, because that's the whole point of the world's existence, that we should recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu and his hand in everything, not just not just making nature grow, but everything that we have in our lives. And that's why the Rambam counts as two mitzvahs. So it's two crucial ideas, two crucial concepts that we're supposed to do, right, to fulfill our mission in this earth. Right, again, either one of them, right, if you do them by themselves, there something is lacking. If you recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, but you don't really thank him, and you don't appreciate the things he's done for us, right, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So then, what are you really recognizing? And if you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all he's done for you, but you don't think that he's actually in control of everything, so you're totally missing the point. So both are intrinsic and both are crucial, right? And that's the whole concept of Bikurim, that when farmers go out and they put in all the effort, right? But really, we're trying to strike down the idea of Kochi Yotzim Yodi, that I am in charge. Really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. We do the Ishtadlus 100%, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of what's going on, really. And that's the concept that we're trying to bring out of here. Okay, within the same vein, right? Part of the entire Bikurim experience, like as I mentioned, recaps what happened to Am Yisrael in Mitzrayim. And one of the things we say over there, it's a whole thing. We actually quote it in the Seder, right, in the Haggadah. But one of the things that we say is that when Bnei Yisrael had a rough time, so Vanitzaka L'Hashem Elokei Voseinu, right, that they cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayishma Hashem is kolenu. The pasuk says Hashem heard our voice. Vayaris anyenu v'samalinu v'slachatzenu. Right, and he saw what was going on over here, and he took us out of Egypt. So the Chafetz Chaim is quoted by a lot of the Bali Musar, and it says that he points out very fascinating. He said the pasuk doesn't say that Hashem heard our tefillas. Right, the pasuk says Vayitzake Hashem El Hashem. Right, we cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayishma Hashem es kolenu. And it says that the pasuk says he heard our voice, right? It seems, says the Chafetz Chaim, that during an Eis Tzara, when they're in deep trouble, right, there's an idea to cry out, right? Vanitzak, right? It means to cry out. Right? It says Chafetz Chaim, that's what Kiviyachol caused the Kosh Baruch Hu to hear. Right? And he says that, yes, Enochanami, you're correct, that our tefillos are never unanswered, they're always valuable, but that's not necessarily immediate. And it says the Chafetz Chaim that Tzaka, crying out, right, in terms of like a desperate crying out inside of you, right? That is immediate. That gets answered immediately. Right? Rav Melech Biderman quotes the Zohar. Right? Pasuk says in Eicha that tzak libam el Hashem. That a person cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tzak libam. Right? It's in their hearts. Right? That's tzak with a tzaddik. Zaka with the Zion is similar. It's crying out loud. That's literally out loud. Right? That's like you go to slichos and people are screaming. That's zaka, and both of them are valuable. Right, Pasuk says that by Shmuel, right, after Shmuel learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to strip Shaul of the kingship, it says Vayizak El Hashem Kol Halayla. He cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu all night. Right, that type of tefillah is dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu from a place of desperation. Right, it's a literal cry out for help. Right, that's what and that gets answered right away. Says the Chafetz Chaim. Pasuk says by Mordechai. Right, when Mordechai found out about the decree of Haman, Vayizak Zeakah Gedolah Mara, he cried out, a bitter, harsh cry. And sure enough, a little bit after that, the next day or the next hour, right, that's ready, you had the whole plan in motion, right, starting with Esther going to the king, etc., etc. So this is crucial to kind of understand and realize that there are different levels of tefillah, right, especially when we're right before the Rosh Hashanah and Slichos, but Motzei Shabbos for some of us, right? And it's very hard to do. It's very hard to come to a place of crying out desperately if you're not desperate, right? Most of us, Baruch Hashem, are not in a desperate physical situation. So for us to come and really reach deep into ourselves and cry out, whether it's inside or outside, we can talk about whether it's appropriate to literally scream and cry out during sleep. I'm not so sure it is, but it could be that it is. But certainly inside, right? Tzaka, right? That's already on the inside. That person should, you know, kind of try cry out. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. Baruch Hashem, life is great, right? In the bigger picture, right? Again, life is great. We all may have a little, you know, small little nitpicks that we're having a tough time. But historically, as I mentioned, you know, many times, life is amazing. Right? We are insanely wealthy compared to where people were 100 years ago. So it's tough, right? Life is Baruch Hashem, right? Life is doing okay. So we have a hard time actually doing this. Says Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, how do you get to a point of tzaka, right? If you're, you know, things are generally good. So he says, beautiful. He says, fascinating. He says that really, if we really thought about it, that each one of us is actually in a desperate situation, right? But only very few of us actually realize it, right? If we could actually truly appreciate and understand and evaluate our own Avodas Hashem, right, where we're holding, right, in the whole, you know, Avodas Hashem thing, so we would realize that things are pretty desperate, right? Things are pretty desperate. So if we could try and think about that, right, then we would realize we're in a bad spot. And that's what we have to cry about, right? If you can't cry about what you're actually struggling with, and some people can, some people can't, right? Sometimes it's hard to be like, well, you know, things are not as good as I really thought they were. So that's hard. But something else that you can do is you can ask Hashem to help you realize. Right? People can cry out, ask Hashem, please help me feel more, help me understand, help me get more in tune with my Avodas Hashem, help me daven better, help me understand the Torah that I'm learning better, right? Help me inspire other people. Right? If you can't feel it yourself, right? So it is, you know, you could probably get yourself to a point where you're quote unquote crying out, right, for help to be able to feel it. Right? I had a Rav I used to admire. I still admire him very much. I used to say that the key to, you know, growth in Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, and really the rest of life, is first step, you have to want it. Right? It's not enough to want it. You have to want to want it. So you get down with the Kosh Baruch Hu to help you to want it. But that's the Eitzah. That's the, you know, without a Kosh Baruch Hu, we can't even succeed. We can't even do anything, right? Again, because, you know, Gemara Kiddushin Daf Lamed, that says that we couldn't overcome the Eitzah Hara if our Kosh Baruch Hu didn't help us. So we need to cry out, right? And we are unable to help. We're paralyzed. The Eitzah Hara is so powerful, and we don't really have the kelim to overcome it ourselves, right? Unless we get that help from a Kosh Baruch Hu. So that's what a person needs to cry out about. Certainly with Slichos coming up. Right, and certainly throughout the Yom Noraim davening, and as Yerachaim says in our pasuk, right, that Akosh Baruch Hu, what did he see? Right, Vayaras Onyenu Ves Amalenu Ves Lagatzenu. What did Hashem see that caused him to take the Jews out of Egypt? So Onyenu, right, is the Yerachaim says is the strength, is the koch of the Yitzhar to weaken us, and make us not sensitive to the battles. Right, Amalenu is the effort that we put in to fight the Yitzhara, and the Lachatzenu is the Lachatz, right? In Israel, Lachatz is stress and duress. Right, the Lachatzenu is the stress that the Yitzhara puts a person under in order to get them to sin. So Kosh Baruch Hu, right, we cried out to Hashem, and says Or Chaim, Kosh Baruch Hu realized, not realized, right, Kosh Baruch Hu, Kiviyachol paid attention to and understood the fact that, hey, listen, it's really hard. Life's really tough. When fighting the Yitzhara, in that sense, life is really tough. Yitzhar is super powerful. He weakens us, makes us not sensitive to the battles that we have every single day and, frankly, every single hour. And it takes tremendous effort to fight him off. So Kosh Baruch Hu, right, was sensitive to that. And that's what Bnei Israel had to do at that point. That's how they were able to be zochah to leave Egypt. My Rebbeim in YU and in Eretz Yisrael, right, YU and YU, when I went to Kol and YU and in Gross and here in Givat Mordechai. So they had a machlokas about I had to interpret machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. As I think we mentioned, and definitely in the seminary year, I definitely mentioned it once or twice, there's a machlokas Rambam, Ramban, how many times a day you have to daven? Right? The Rambam says you have to daven once, and the Ramban says you have to daven in an eis tzara, at a time of need, the time when you're desperate. So which of those two is more often? Right? Once a day or in a time of need? Right, which is the chumrah, right? As it's just to use rabbi speak, which is the chumrah, which is the kula, right? Which makes you have to daven more, which makes you have to daven less? So when I was in YU, Rav Shechter said that the Rambam is the chumrah, that to daven every single day is a chumrah. The Ramban says only when you're in trouble. How often are we in trouble? Not that often. So, okay, so the Rambam would insist that davening once every single day would make you, you know, have to daven more often. But here in Eretz Yisrael, Samar Rebbeim, and according to Brisker Rav, and Rav Yashiv, and Rav Miller, so he said, no, what do you mean? Every single day, many times a day, there's an Eitz Tzara, right? All the time. If you need parking, that's an Eitz Tzara. If you're struggling with your Eitz Tzara, that's an Eitz Tzara. That's a time of need. Well, you have to daven all the time. They tell about the Brisker Rav that someone would come to him with a Shiloh, and you know, he would say a little bit of tefillah for him, because he would be able to be sensitive. Shiloh, advice, whatever, life, whatever was going on in that person's life, he was able to be sensitive to the person's plight. And he would say a little tefillah, l'ishuas ha-kivisi Hashem, whatever, a short little, not like Shemon Esrei, but he would say a little tefillah because he was sensitive. That was an Eitz Tzara. He thought it was a mitzvah to daven. So that's our job, to kind of tap into the struggle that we're having and analyze and see how much we need to cry out to Kosh Baruch Hu during Slichos and Yom Noraim. And if we don't feel like, you know, we're at that point, so we should try and cry out to get to that point. Right? That's also very, very valuable. Okay, let's switch gears here and focus a little bit on the Tochacha, because, you know, it is the majority of the Parsha. We'll see how it goes. We'll see where it takes us. One of the maybe the most famous line in the Tochacha, it's okay if you haven't heard of it, is Takas Asher Lo Avadta Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tuv Levav Merov Kol. The Torah says, right, Pasuk Mem Zayin in Perek Chav Ches. The Torah says, why do you get the Tochacha? Now, if you read the Tochacha, do yourself a favor, read the Tochacha, because I'm not sure if it really is appreciated how terrible it really is. Like, we hear about all of these things that Moshe said, and we read about all of these types of things that happened during the Churban, and definitely during the Holocaust. And it doesn't register until you read, like, you know, mothers eating their babies, like, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu raining down ash instead of water from the sky. Like, it's intense. It's intense. So one of the psukim in the Tochacha says the reason you're going to get the Tochacha is Tachas Asher Lo Avadta as Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha Uvetuv Levav Merov Kol. Because you didn't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Simcha when you were happy, Uvetuv Levav and gladness of heart, Merov Kol when everything was great, when you were good. So the simple pshat, seemingly, if you just read that pasuk and translated it, seems to be that you get all this bad stuff because you weren't Oved Hashem with Simcha, right? Ivdu is Hashem with Simcha, and if you don't, Tochacha. Now that's a really bitter pill to swallow. That's, I mean, listen, I know, I understand that Hashem wants us to be happy and all, but like, if I'm bummed out for a week, that's going to lead to the Tochacha. And if I do a mitzvah on Sukkot and I'm kind of like, I shake the lulav and I'm kind of like not super happy about it, I'm just kind of like, whatever, thinking about, you know, the lessons of the esrog is the heart and the shidra and the lulav is the spine and etc. If I just, and I'm not like super happy though, that's going to get me the Tochacha? That's intense. So the first way of understanding, I think there are two main ways of understanding the pasuk, and we'll talk about both of them. The first way of understanding is the Kotzker Rebbe, the Chasam Sofer, and others. I think mostly usually quoted in the name of the Kotzker Rebbe. Anyway, so he says, move the comma. They say, it's not that you get the Tochacha because, right, again, if you had the text in front of you, I would draw it out. But pasuk says, Tachas Asher Lo Avadta Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tuv Levav, because you didn't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Simcha. Says the Kotzker Rebbe and the Chasam Sofer, etc., move the comma. What really it should say is Tachas Asher Lo Avadta Hashem Elokecha, comma. Because what are you getting the Tochacha for? Because when you didn't serve Hashem, it was B'Simcha V'Tuv Levav. It was B'Simcha. It was happy. When you did Averos, you were happy. You were B'Simcha. Meaning, there are two types of Averos. And most of the Averos that we do are ones we can't help ourselves. We have a taiva, we have some sort of yitzhara, we're not sensitive to it, we don't realize, we didn't study it. We don't generally do averos b'simcha. On the other hand, there are some averos that we do b'simcha. Right? Like, you know, you get excited about it, you look forward to it even. If you straight up don't care, you look forward to it. That causes a tochacha. If you venture, again, we're all fighting Yetzer Hara in a certain way. But once you venture from, all right, listen, the Yetzer Hara is too strong, or I'm not sensitive to this halacha, or I don't know enough about it that it means enough to me. Once you move from that into like, oh yeah, I can't wait to have that cheeseburger, right? I can't wait to you know, use my phone on Shabbos, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a perversion, right? That's a mockery of the whole system. That shows you don't really care about Yiddishkeit and Torah at all, right? You just do what makes you feel good, right? If it's a mitzvah, so it makes you feel good, it pads your ego, wow, I'm doing a good thing, so you just feel good about yourself. If it's an avera, it also makes you feel good, and you'll do it. So at that point, in a certain sense, there's no difference between mitzvahs and averos, because all you're doing is following the Torah for selfish reasons when you feel like it. So that I can understand. That already, when the whole halakha system and the whole concept of living a life in a Torah way, when that's perverted to the point where you're looking forward to the averos, okay, so that I can understand, right, why you get the tochcha. But that's not the simple pshat. The simple pshat is when you read the pasuk, right, it sounds like that we get the tochcha because we didn't serve a kosh baruch hu b'simcha. So how in the world does that work? So the key is the last two words of the pasuk. Pasuk says, merov kol, from lots of good, or lots of everything. Rashi explains, what does that mean? Be'od shehaya lecha kol tov. Right, when everything was good for you, right, when things were good, you didn't serve Hashem with simcha. So Kosh Baruch Hu brings upon the tochacha. So what is that? How does that work? So again, as we've been studying, we've been, you know, if you definitely see the Shisharim, if you've been reading along with us, so what does Kosh Baruch Hu want from us in this world? Right, Kosh Baruch Hu wants us to choose good. Right, he wants us to choose good over evil. The mitzvos and averos are there to define good and evil for us. And it's first parak, Mesilas Yesharim, that, you know, we should choose good over evil. And everything Kosh Baruch Hu does, right, is to push us in that direction. Right? Everything he gives us, right, is, you know, is a nudge in the positive to hopefully help us overcome and go in the right direction. Right? If it's we're living prosperous times, so it's a nisayon, it's a test to give and how you spend your money and how you spend your time. Do you do mitzvos? Do you do chesed? Do you give tzedakah, etc.? There's a book that my wife likes very, very much by Rebbetzin Esther Young-Rice, who just passed away recently. The book is called Life is a Test. Everything is a test. I mean, everything Kosh Baruch Hu does is to help us, right, grow higher and higher. So, if Kosh Baruch Hu blesses us with prosperity, right, and we don't use it properly, Kosh Baruch Hu gives us Merov Kol, we have everything, right? Ba'ud Shehaya Lecha Kol Tov, as Rashi says, when everything was good. And then we didn't, then you didn't serve a Kosh Baruch Hu b'simcha. So then a Kosh Baruch Hu, not as a punishment per se, but he just forced to change things up, right? If that's not working to get us down the right path, if the prosperity and all the wealth and all the blessings that a Kosh Baruch Hu is giving us is not nudging us in the right way, so then Hashem has to try another method. Not because he's angry per se. The Torah definitely uses the language of angry, but Akash Baruch Hu is trying to get us to the ultimate goal. If we're getting it when life is good, then great. But if not, he needs another method. And that method is when life is not as good. Right? When you're a little bit more desperate, as we discussed, right? You cry out to Akash Baruch Hu. Maybe then you'll turn to Akash Baruch Hu. Right? Again, it's never 0 to 60. Akash Baruch Hu never just pushes the pedal all the way, but sometimes he needs to kind of like make a person, Rahman Tzlan Lo Leno, God forbid, more desperate so that he'll turn to Akash Baruch Hu and cry out to him and realize Hashem's place in this world. So it comes out according to this that the Tocha is not so much a punishment. It definitely is a punishment, but it's not so much a punishment as it is simple cause and effect. Right? Again, obviously I don't want to, you know, minimize it. There are definitely aspects of punishment, but the entire point is to get us turned around. Right? It's simply a result of the other methods not working. Right? Sometimes you need to shock the system. Sometimes you need to reboot the computer. Right? Sometimes people are so stuck in their ways that the only way to wake them up is lo aleinu, is God forbid, chas v'shalom, is to uproot everything that they know and hold dear. The easiest example we can give is what we just had with COVID. Right? Aside from obviously the threat of illness, no overall hysteria, but it was a complete upheaval of life. And I don't know about you, but the most disheartening and like unnerving thing for me was the sense that Akash Baruch Hu clearly was not happy with what was going on in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly wasn't happy with us, wanted us to change the way we went about our lives. Literally, everything was uprooted. That's what Chazal said was the truth about the... What happened about the Korban. Rav Soloveitchik points out, in The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, the first word of the kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av is Shavas, like Shabbos. But it has a connotation of suddenness. It just stopped. Right? Shabbos suru meni, right? That Hashem, just like Hashem rested on the Shabbos day, right? And in an instant, the Kodesh Baruch Hu changed the day from Friday to Shabbos, from Kodesh to Chol, so too, in an instant, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Right? In the sense that even though the Jews were told that it was going to happen, right? No one really thought it was going to happen. So when it happened, it was sudden. It was all of a sudden like Yerushalayim went quiet. And like normally a person is expecting a disaster, right? You have a weather disaster or something. There's a hurricane, people are ready. Right? But the Churban, no one was ready, right? It happened so quick, right? Even Yirmiyahu prophesied a million times that Yerushalayim was going to be destroyed. Didn't expect it to be so quick. Kosh Barco told him to go buy something for his uncle, and when he came back, Beis Mikdash was gone. What? That was what it was. And as Rav Pinkus explains, that the Churban was really just HaKadosh Baruch Hu was forced to shock the system because Rav Pinkus writes that the Jews would sin, and they would bring a korban, and they'd be like, oh, okay, everything's fine now. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to eliminate, right, what kept them in the vicious cycle of chait, korban, chait, korban, chait, korban. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to just shock them out of their system because that's the way they were living their lives and nothing was going to stop, right? Even a ton of warnings from all these prophets. So that's what the Tocha almost is. And I don't know, we can get a little bit, I guess it's a little controversial, but certainly you have to say the same thing about the Holocaust. Now, again, I don't want to, disclaimer, I am not one of those people who go around and say, you know, this is what caused it, and this is, this person, these people, I'm not blaming the victim, God forbid, Rachman al-Tzlan lo'aleinu, all the people who died were Kedoshim and Tahorim. The question is, as Rav Victor Miller would point out, is when were they Kedoshim and Tahorim? We're going to talk about it a little bit, but I don't want to belabor that point. What I'm trying to say is the outlook of a religious Jew is to look at the world through the lens of Torah and figure out what's happening and why things are happening. Right? Again, I'm not espousing my own opinions, right? I'm simply, I can send you guys a link if you want in the chat, right? It's an article that's literally a transcription of Victor Miller's opinion about the Holocaust. He was in Slobodka, right before. He was born in America. He was in Slobodka in the 1930s, and then he went back to America. He didn't flee, he just went home. But he basically explains that, there was the Jews in Europe, without getting, controversial, he explains that the Jews in Europe needed a shock to the system. That the Haskalah had basically, ripped through Europe and had destroyed Jewish life. Now we think of, I feel like, unfortunately, is it true or not? Whose account is true or whatever? We kind of think of like Europe as like everybody living in the shtetl, everybody wearing strimals, this Rosh Hashiva, that Rosh Hashiva, Rav Chana Wasserman, Chavetz Chaim, and all of a sudden Hitler came and destroyed everything. Unfortunately, it's not as cut and dry, and unfortunately, a lot of religious Jewry had been destroyed already, right, by the Haskalah and by all the secular, pressure, etc., etc. So, but Rav Victor Miller, I'm just literally quoting. I'm staring at it on the screen, so I'm just quoting it to you. He basically explains how, in a town like Slobodka, there on Shabbos there were boatloads of Jews going, smoking, going on vacation, going to the islands or whatever it was down the river, Jews going to work. He said in Pinsk, which had 40,000 Jews, they didn't even have 10 kids to go to yeshiva. He said there were less than 10 boys who went to yeshiva from Pinsk. I'm not going to belabor the point. But he would argue that the Jews in Europe and Jewry in general and world Jewry needed a shock to the system. The Meshech Chachma, who lived in Dvinsk, which is nowadays in Latvia, he writes that the Jews in Germany started calling Berlin Yerushalayim. Right? So again, it without getting any further into it, and we can definitely schmooze another time, but that was also, right, when you think about the Holocaust, you think about a complete uprooting and a complete reset almost, right? It's not almost, it's literally a reset button on Am Yisrael. Rachman Tzlan Lo Aleinu should never happen ever again, right? And this viewpoint is, again, I don't think it makes it less serious, but this is the proper viewpoint that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us good, he wants to help us grow, but if we don't, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got to try different methods, right? And this is a crucial lesson to understand nowadays, because for us, life is good, right? We are in the middle of that test of prosperity, right? For many, many hundreds and thousands of years, we were tested in a different way. Right? And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed us with amazing wealth and amazing technology and amazing resources. And the question is how we spend it. Right? Do we scroll through pictures of this prostitute on Instagram and this Zona on TikTok? Or are we downloading Sheer apps and listening to Jewish podcasts and inspiring messages, etc.? Right? The internet and technology and the wealth that we all have, they're not negative or positive. They're just tools, right? Nothing more. Right? It's just up to us how we use them. And this is literally what the Torah says at the beginning of the Parsha. Right? The Parsha says, one of the things we say in the Bikurim, right? V'samachta b'chol ha-tov, right? Be happy with all the good. Well, how do you be happy with all the good? Atav ha-Levi v'ager yisher b'kirbecha. Right? You and the Levi. The Levi didn't have a portion of land in Eretz Yisrael. He needed to get gifts to survive. He didn't have a way necessarily to make his parnasa. The ger, a convert, for sure. People who are less fortunate, less privileged than we are, right? How do you spend your money, right? Are we grateful? Are we giving or not so much? So that's a crucial, crucial message to take to heart, right? Again, the tochacha is almost too scary, right, to impact us on a deeper level. And also, nowadays, fear tactics don't work in chinuch. Like they used to maybe in different yeshivas back in the day, but nowadays it's not as relatable. But what we can relate to is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us good in every single way possible. And if Rachman Litzlan, the test of prosperity, which we're doing right now, right, doesn't hit the mark, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu just needs to try different means, right, to get us in the right direction. So that's also very heartening, a little bit inspiring, because we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to take care of us, bottom line, and no matter what he has to do. So Mitzvah Shem, let's take that to heart and be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Nisayon of prosperity. That's also Bikurim, right? To recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us this tremendous gift of this physical world that we're living in, and that we should thank him for it. And that's literally the Mitzvah of Bikurim, and that's also kind of like the lesson that you see from this pasuk in the Tochacha. We should be zocha to be serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'simcha. Merov Kol. All right. Have a great, great Shabbos, everybody. And we'll speak soon.